Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs. Your knower knows what you're supposed to do, and it's just a matter of getting quiet, getting still, shutting out the shoulds, the noise, the advice, the, you know, naysayers, the research, and just you and your partner decide. Hi, Bravies. This is Jessica Pate, mom, storyteller, advocate, and the founder and CEO of We Are Brave Together, whose mission is to preserve and protect the mental health of caregiving moms everywhere. And I'm joined by two fantastic fellow Brave Mom co-hosts to help answer your questions.
Hi, I'm Susanna Peace Lavelle. I'm an author, a certified life coach and soul care coach, and an advocate for the health and wellness of disability families everywhere.
Hi, I'm Dr. Zoe, a licensed psychotherapist, writer, speaker, author, and complex shame expert.
We are gathered here to share our experiences,
share our wisdom,
and answer your questions.
Have a caregiving question? Find the link in the show notes to leave us your message.
May you feel seen and heard and not alone.
Ask us anything.
Hi, Zoe, Susanna, and Jessica. You've all been moms for a long, long time, and I'm a newer mom. My first child, now age 3, was born with a disability, and I just can't decide if I should have more kids or not. How did you decide?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another Ask Us Anything episode. I'm so excited that you've decided to join us today. We've got a good question, as always. Hi, Zoe. Hi, Susanna.
Hi, ladies. Good to see you today.
And I'm so excited to talk about this topic because we've all dealt with it. And, you know, the caregivers out there, I would assume probably most of them, unless they have had their very last child and they know that already going in, it's a question that a lot of people wonder and ponder and fret about.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Especially when you envisioned what family life would look like.
Yeah.
And, you know, if your firstborn or secondborn is born with a diagnosis, a disability, medical struggle or challenge, it's natural to wonder and worry, you know, should I, can I, what will happen? What's the likelihood of reoccurrence? Can I handle this? There's just so many things, and we'll dive in to that process and we'll each share our own experiences. Susanna.
Well, I think that, you know, the three of us are mothers, in varying capacity, right? I happen to be a single mother with one daughter. You both have more than, you know, 2, 3, Zoe, 5, right? Couple of five,
Zoe. Kiddos. 1,000 children.
Right.
And I think that even our journeys to motherhood, becoming mothers for the first time, are varied. And, you know, even our stories of origin, I know that we all have multiple siblings. So, so I just feel like there are so many different pieces that we think about when we're considering, you know, how to, you know, what sort of family footprint that we want to have for our own lives. And, you know, as we know with this sort of extreme caregiving journey, what we vision for our life often is not exactly as we thought it would turn out. And so, you know, it can be a vulnerable topic, I think, for a lot of us, even moms out there who are dealing with infertility. You know, I just want to be very mindful and conscious and gentle with our audience today as we're just talking about, you know, growing and expanding our families.
Right. And just how do you make that decision? Do either one of you want to go first on your own personal story?
I'll go first, okay. Since I have the most children.
Yes. So tell our listeners, Zoe, the ages of your children. And if it's okay, can we ask, you know, how old were you when you got started?
Yeah. So I have had a very interesting relationship with motherhood. And my very first child, I got pregnant with her when I was 15. And I had to place her for adoption. And I had a lot of shame and guilt surrounding all of that. And, you know, grief and just motherhood. And I went on to, you know, get married. And then I had three more children. My third child with my husband, so my fourth child, my first kept daughter, Sullivan, was born with Prader-Willi syndrome. And, you know, that was a huge struggle for lots of years, just getting used to all the things that we caregiving moms have to get used to, the appointments, the doctors, the terms, learning the disorder, all the things. So I had so much shame and so much guilt with placing my first daughter for adoption. I had this crazy false belief that God was punishing me with my second daughter, punishing her for what I had done and giving up my first daughter. And so I carried all of that. And yet there was this little spark in me that did want another child. And really, I really deep in my heart, I wished for a daughter. I did not do what you guys, I think, are going to share about your, you know, all the research. What I did know is that my daughter's disorder was not genetic. So the geneticist had explained to us that we were no more likely to have another child with Prader-Willi syndrome than any other disorder or anything like that. And so I won't say that my heart was put at ease, because just like you mentioned, Jessica, once you've experienced having a child with special needs, it opens your eyes up to the reality that that could be any pregnancy. And I don't know about you guys, but I still have this sense of like holding my breath whenever anybody that is really close to me is pregnant, because I always worry that, you know, I didn't before I had Sullivan, I didn't think about that. I mean, you kind of think about it, but you never think it's going to happen to you. And right. Now I'm very aware of that with mm-hmm. everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I did not allow myself to purposefully get pregnant with Sigourney, my last. I kind of did nothing. And because I couldn't actively make that decision, if that makes sense. But of course, well, there's a whole longer story of that. We actually thought my husband couldn't have children anymore because he had prostate issues and had a surgery, and the doctor told him he couldn't have children anymore. And he was wrong. So I just did nothing. I did it right. I did not actively try to have Sigourney, and I thought that I couldn't because of my husband's procedure. And then I just found out one day I was pregnant. And when I did, I remember I went into my closet and sat down in my closet and called my best friend and whispered to her that I'm pregnant. And, you know, she was so excited and so happy. And I was just so scared. Like, what if this happens again? And so I can't say that I actively made the decision. Sigourney was born, you know, in all of her glory and a very healthy girl, and you know, she's gonna rule the world. But I remember even during my labor just having that fear that something was going to be wrong. And so I know that that is a natural feeling for any mom as she's contemplating, you know, having another child. And we just did a little research as well, and what we found out was that 42.5% of mothers in a particular study decided not to have another child despite wanting another child and citing the fear of recurrence of their child's disability and inadequate support. And so that's the other thing, is that inadequate support. Like, can I do this again, right? If this is what our life is going to be and I'm already not getting the support I need, how could I possibly do that again? So that's my story.
And Zoe, how old were your boys when Sullivan was born?
So when Sullivan, my daughter with Prader-Willi syndrome, my oldest was 4 and my middle child was 2. So I had 4, 2, and then a newborn.
So you were in the thick of to have that many kids. Yes, you were in the thick of it. thick of it. And then what's the gap between Sully and Sigourney?
It was 7 years. Seven years later, Sigourney popped up into our life.
I love hearing stories. I could listen all day to motherhood stories. I dreamed of becoming a mother my entire life. It was something that I knew very, very clearly and specifically early on that I was going to be a mother, and I couldn't wait to be a mother. And I could, often I shifted my focus on what type of career person I was going to be, because I always wanted to work and I always wanted to be a mother.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to be a stay-at-home mom in the beginning of each of my children's lives. Like, I was very, very specific with and detailed with all of the things that I wanted to happen and was going to work out exactly as I had envisioned.
Of course.
So, you know, I had been dating my boyfriend for a couple of years and I was just sort of pressuring him that we needed to get married because I wanted to have so many kids. And it was the only reason why. great reason, right? So I was, in my early or late 20s, and I was like, I remember I want to have 4 or 5, so we got to get going, right? So I was very, again, very particular about it. Anyway, so we ended up getting married, and, we have since divorced, but I feel like, I was so focused on the plan and the idea and the vision of what I wanted it to look like. It was very hard for me to be so conscious and present in each moment back then. That is my reflection now, many years later. But anyhow, so we got married. 3 months later, I got pregnant, and I was like, hee, 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 my little plan is working. Everything is going the way that I want it to go. And other than the pregnancy being very challenging in terms of, nausea and vomiting, and I think I threw up for the first 7 months of my pregnancy, which, by the way, was not uncommon, right? Mother had
terrible.
It was not. I wasn't in a blissed out pregnancy. My hair wasn't beautiful and wavy and full. You know what I mean? I wasn't. I gained 50 pounds, right? So it was uncomfortable, and I didn't feel great. And I was working, and my office at the time was not that far away from my house, so I'd run home during breaks and throw up in my toilet at home because I didn't want to throw up at the, sort of communal potty, restroom. I was so embarrassed. So other than just not feeling great, the pregnancy was okay. And then when my daughter Arizona was born, she just sort of commanded a lot of attention. And it wasn't clear right away that she had disabilities or any sort of special needs. She did have food allergies that we found out within the first year of her life. And that was really very medically challenging and complex. We were in and out of hospitals, and I was so worried about everything around us. So that was really sort of a special need. And then it wasn't until she was about 2 and a half that she was actually given some, sort of concrete diagnoses in terms of autism spectrum disorder, auditory processing disorder, all kinds of motor planning things, and then ultimately an ADHD diagnosis, and then a generalized anxiety diagnosis, which sort of rules the roost these days now that she's 19 years of age. But at some point, because I had this plan to have more babies, have lots of babies rather, when Arizona was 2, I checked in with myself and I was like, there is no way that I could, there's no way that that could even be a possibility for me. I mean, Arizona was, she commanded a lot of attention. She was head to toe covered in eczema because of her food allergies. She wasn't potty trained at all, not even close. And she was just kind of, doing her own thing. She was like living here. She liked to do her own idea, but no one around understood what her intention was in terms of her behavior and what it was that she was doing. So it, I just thought that she was stubborn. I just thought that she didn't want to listen to me. Turns out that she had so many severe sensory processing disorder, dysfunctionalities. I hate all of these negative words, but it's the way that things were described to us back then. Anyway, all of that to say that I was trying to be conscious around, okay, I would love to have more children. Can I, The answer is probably no. And it wasn't until she was around three and a half that I started thinking, maybe, right? And around that time, I really started digging into research because I wanted to know, like, it really helps my brain to understand statistics and figures. Mm-hmm. So Zoe, when you mentioned 42.5%, I mean, that is like music to my ears because I actually feel less alone actually hearing that statistic.
Yeah. Stay with us, Bravies. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, brave friends.
And here's the thing with autism spectrum disorder. We didn't know, is it genetic? Is it environmental? Mm-hmm. We still don't really completely fully know, right? Is it a combination of the two? What is it, right? So I went to go research and found the top geneticist at the University of California at Los Angeles, UCLA, Dr. Barbara Cranston. And I got into her office. It was hard to get an appointment, but I made my way into her office and she had me do a bunch of blood work and she had me really pull out like the family history of like generations on both my husband's side and my side. And we just, it was a really, really thorough, conscious process that I appreciated. And ultimately at the end of all of these findings, after, you know, all of these appointments, so she was saying to me that there's less than a 5% chance that you could have another child with autism. And I was hearing, yeah. And that means there's a 5% chance that I could have another child with autism. And I am barely hanging on by a string. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom for that first year, right? We had planned for that financially. And my husband at the time was doing his best. And the caregiving load was on me, okay? 100%, I would say the physical every day-to-day caregiving was on me. So I just felt like my capacity was so limited. I was unhappy. I was experiencing postpartum depression still, even years later. And it was really, really challenging. And so just as I was having this conversation with Dr. Cranston, I found out I was pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had been precautionary. We weren't trying. In fact, we weren't even talking about it other than me having this conversation with Dr. Cranston just so I could do the research first. And then somehow, miraculously, and it had to be miraculous because even counting down the days prior to when I should have conceived or whatever it may be, my husband was on a business trip and I was like, wow, I had to go. I ran to the urgent care. I was like, take a blood test right now. I mean, I was so upset. I was so worried. I was so scared. I was so scared. That's mm-hmm. what it was. I was so scared. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that pregnancy was really challenging and I ended up being so, so sick. But when I went back to an appointment, I didn't want the baby. I didn't want it. And I was like talking to the baby and I was like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't want you. I'm really so sorry, but this is really hard for me. I feel so guilty about this to this day. It mm-hmm. makes me very, very emotional, even just talking about it. And so I remember going into the doctor and there was an ultrasound and I was by myself. And this is how disassociated I was. Like I didn't even ask my husband to come with me to this particular sonogram. And she was like, yeah, there is no longer a heartbeat here. Mm-hmm. And I was probably 7 or 8 weeks pregnant at the time. And I remember thinking, wow, did I push my baby away? Mm-hmm. You know, did I make that happen because I didn't want it? And the guilt that crept in with me, and I luckily I was working with a beautiful, beautiful spiritual therapist at the time, Susie Lula. And I remember working with her and she said to me, Susanna, you don't have that power. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have that power. This has everything to do with God, everything to do with the plan, right? The universe and so forth. So all of that to say, wow, that was a story. But I ended up having the realization though, because prior to this pregnancy, this unexpected pregnancy, I felt so much pressure from everyone else telling me your special needs child needs a sibling. Mm-hmm. And you, mom and dad, need to have a neurotypical child to make you feel better. And I was like, well, who's to say that's going to happen, right? I mean, there's so much noise coming in from all areas. But when that miscarriage happened, there was this clarity. The blessing of that was that I was able to check in with myself and say, you know what? Now I know it's absolutely A-okay to just have only have one child. It's okay that she's not going to have siblings. And I just felt so at peace with that. You know, I don't know if my husband did. I mean, maybe that's one of the things that led to the dissolution of our marriage. I will never know. But what I do know for me was this overall sense of peace of like, okay, I am a mother to this one child and I'm going to be so conscious and focused and present with this one child. That is my story.
Susanna, thank you for being so honest. Thank you. This is going to help so many people who are listening in. I really thank you for sharing that.
And Susanna, you just shared such a powerful story of really your decision making and what brought you clarity and how losing your second child brought clarity to you that this was the journey you wanted to take, was as Arizona's mama. Yeah.
Thank you. So my story, I think when I was pregnant with Ryan, who's my second, so I had Luke, who was 2 when I got pregnant with Ryan, or almost 2 when I got pregnant with Ryan. And I was like, 2's good. 1-on-1. This is manageable. I can control this. Right? This is manageable. This is controllable. We got 2 parents. We got 2 kids. And by the way, when I was pregnant with Ryan, we didn't find out if we were going to have a boy or a girl because we found out with Luke. And my husband said, can we be surprised this time? And I'm so glad too, because when you're pregnant, you're already dreaming and scheming about what family life is going to look like or what life is going to look like, or, you know, because he was my second, you know, what's the sibling experience going to be like? And by the way, let's rewind a little bit. I came from the Brady Bunch on steroids. I came from a family where it was blended and blended and blended. So I am one of 10. I have 6 half siblings, 1 full sister, 2 step siblings. So I came from, you know, a huge family, and my parents divorced when I was little. So I often, and still do, refer to my dad's side and my mom's side, but there were a plethora. I didn't have any cousins, but barely. I had 2 cousins but I had enough siblings, you know, to make up for it. Right. So I came from that. I didn't necessarily want 4, 5, or 6 kids. I remember my mom said, have even numbers, because she had 5 total. She said, have 2 or 4. It's funny what you reflect on that your parents say. And I was like, well, I was the 5th. So you said have 2 or 4. Tell me how you really feel. Anyways, I'm kidding. So I came from a big family. I didn't necessarily want a big family, being, you know, at the time, a perfectionist and a control freak. I was like, 2 is good. So we had Ryan, and right away, you know, we knew something wasn't right. We spent a month in the hospital. At 5 weeks of age, he was diagnosed with Prader-Willi syndrome. And it's a very daunting diagnosis to read about. And we were in the thick of it all with OT, PT, speech, geneticist, GI doctor, pulmonology doctor, urology, just so many specialists. And then when Ryan was 1 year, my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and we lost her a few months later. So there was so much going on. And even though we were in the thick of it, I really wanted a third. I genuinely had a burning desire for another child. I also wanted a girl. I also didn't know what Ryan and Luke's sibling experience would be like. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know, you don't know how impacted your child is going to be when they are diagnosed. You have no idea where they're going to fall on the spectrum of that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't know, like, would Ryan talk or not talk? Would he, you know, be greatly affected intellectually, behaviorally? What was this going to be like? Would Luke feel like he's growing up alone or very lonely? Or will they have like a really deep connection and still feel the bond, the brother bond? You know, all these questions, all these wondering, all these worries, right? But I just couldn't get away from the strong desire. And same with Chris. I mean, we both had a really strong desire for a third child. And so we decided to go forward. We talked with the geneticist, and she certainly told us that, you know, PWS, like you said, Zoe, it's not passed down. It's not inherited. It is
genetic. It's a genetic mutation, but it is not passed down.
It's a genetic mutation, but it's not passed down.
Right.
But the world of disability was very real to me. Mm-hmm. And she could have, or this next baby could have, lots of things going on. You know, who am I to think that this third baby would be perfectly healthy? So I had a lot of thoughts and things swirling around. Then we decided to go ahead, and I got pregnant, called the geneticist again. And, you know, she recommended certain testing. I was 35 when I was pregnant with Kate. My husband and I went back and forth, and we decided we're not going to do any testing. Unless, you know, of course, something was seen in regular ultrasound appointments. But we just decided that any scenario plays out. Okay, so one, if we do testing and we go through all the waiting and what, you know, and let's say we find out, yes, there is something wrong, we're going to have to accept that, and we will say this child is a gift, and we will do everything we can to support him or her. Then what if we get false positives, right? We get false positives on tests, and we don't know that until, you know, again, we'd come to the same conclusion. This child is a gift. We will love this child with our whole heart, mind, body, soul, and do everything we can to support this child, only to then later find out, oh, actually, everything's okay. The other scenario is if we don't do anything and then we're filled with worry and wonder, go into labor and think, why didn't I test? Why didn't we test? Yeah. Now I don't know. Now I'm going into this labor and I'm so worried. Again, we would have to come to this conclusion of whatever happens in the next few hours or day when this child is born and we find out that something is wrong, we will still say this child is a gift and we will do everything we can to love it and support it. So I thought, if all of those conclusions, you come to the same sort of answer or conclusion, then why would I put myself through all the driving back and forth for testing, the waiting for answers, waiting through the pregnancy with all this worry because something is going on or what have you? I just thought, until they tell me in an ultrasound, we need to do something, we need more testing, or we're going to ride this out. And so, you know, Kate came to us in 2005, push, out she was. It was so easy peasy. And, you know, all my pregnancies were really delicious. And to borrow Susanna's word, and labor and delivery, I absolutely loved because I knew I was going to get to meet my baby. Now, I also didn't have 24 hours, 36 hours of labor. I didn't have that experience. I had really, really good experiences, thankfully. And Kate actually came a little early. My water broke. She came a week early. So that was our thought process. And in fact, Kate was such a peach. I wanted a fourth, but then she started crawling at the same time that Ryan started walking. And I was like, nope, never mind. No fourth. No fourth.
Wow.
No fourth child.
My goodness. What a beautiful, I mean, two really beautiful stories. And I'm hopeful that for a listener out there who may be scared, maybe wondering, maybe longing, that it gives you permission to really just seek your heart and do what you feel is right for you, not what other people tell you, not what you think should have been in the plan, right? But do what feels right for you in this moment in time.
Stay with us, Bravies. We will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio. Or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, Bravies.
In terms of just even then checking in with ourselves, like I love this opportunity for us to really reflect and go inward. I always love this opportunity. So any of you moms out there are really thinking and wondering and just maybe even grappling a little bit, what should I do, right? All of the different things taken into consideration, you know, the adequate support, et cetera. I felt in my journey of parenting back then, I felt very sort of on my own in that I'm, you know, was making decisions on my own. I had a husband. I was making sort of decisions on what was okay for me. I'm curious about the thought process of really having like deeper connection, an opportunity for connection and communication with partners, and how that was for the two of you, if you can respond to that, because I feel like that's an important piece. I think that if we have the opportunity to be able to have these vulnerable conversations with our partners, you know, how enriching that could be. So I'm just curious how it was for you too.
I can't say that mine was a partnership. My husband, and I don't know if it was just denial and that he hadn't been doing the majority of the caretaking of Sully already, but he was like, yeah, great, like whatever. But remember, we also didn't think he could have any other children. So once it happened and I was pregnant, he was happy. He was just like, great. And I'm sitting here with, what about all these things and all the questions? So I can't say that it was a partnership when it comes to making that decision. But we did decide, though, not to find out the gender, because I desperately wanted a girl and I didn't want to be disappointed. I figured I'll get to the, you know, to the labor and delivery. And when I have a baby, I have a baby and it won't matter. But I didn't want to be disappointed during the pregnancy. But that's really the only choice we made together, was to both not test, same as you, Jessica, and to not find out the gender.
I think we definitely were very solidly evaluating together. Chris came from a family of three. We had his parents nearby, very much supporting us and very, very, very helpful and very hands-on grandparents. And so I think that made it easier to decide. Chris had a very stable job. Mm-hmm. I was able to stay home. Even though I was managing so much with Ryan and just having two kids, you know, a baby and a toddler, I felt very supported. I just think we were aligned. We both had that desire. We also came to the conclusion we're going to be busy anyways, you know, like back to Jess, who's a control freak and wants everything manageable. And I actually did seek out in the PWS parent circle, what did you do and how did you decide? You know, and I remember a couple moms said, you're going to be busy anyway with two children. You're going to be busy anyways with, you know, Ryan and all of his appointments or therapies or what is required. So if you have that desire, go ahead. You and Chris are in alignment. Mm-hmm. Follow that desire. And I always say that the third one sends you over the cliff a little bit, but it is so worth it. Yeah. I have zero regrets. Now, have I ever had times where I thought, what would it be like if I just had one or two? You know, what is that like? Wow, that just seems like so easier, right?
I've thought that so many times. What if I only had one or two or maybe only three? Like, how different would my life be?
Three.
Oh my God. Only four. And the funny thing is that, yeah, I couldn't imagine my life without Sigourney. She continues to be the biggest blessing, even though I was terrified up until the moment she was born. And after she was born, she didn't pass her hearing test. And I remember in the hospital thinking, oh, this is it. And I remember thinking, okay, I can do this. Like, I can do sign language. If that's all that's wrong, if it's just that she's deaf, and for an entire day, because we had to stay an extra day for her to get tested the next day, I was coming to grips with the fact that I would have a deaf daughter. And I was actually okay with it, because, you know, probably having had the experience with Sullivan and feeling like I can do this. And then the next day she passed her hearing test with flying colors. But yeah, it was a huge process, and I am so eternally grateful for it. And that's also not to say that that's what somebody else should do, right?
Right.
And I also, and I'm curious about, for you guys, I got so much flack for having another after having a child. Please. I had a friend that basically said, I told you so. Like, why would you try to have another child? And this was actually before I had Sullivan, because she and I were best friends. We had both had two kids the same age, and I decided to have another child, and Sully ended up having all of this. And she was really just like, well, I told you, why couldn't you have just been happy with the two that you had? And then to then go have another one. Yeah. So
there's that noise.
Right. The noise. Oh. It's there. The outside judgment. Yeah.
The noise, the judgment, the opinions, the advice, all of it. Susanna, you were talking earlier about like sort of going inward, you know, and again, maybe this is going to be too woo-woo for some, but honestly, like I believe that we've all been given a knowing.
Yes.
Your knower knows what you're supposed to do. And it's just a matter of getting quiet, getting still, shutting out the shoulds, the noise, the advice, the, you know, naysayers, the research, and just you and your partner decide. Just get calm, get quiet, and wait for that answer. Mm-hmm. It's inside of you. It is inside of you. You don't have to ask 10,000 people. You don't have to ask the internet if you should do this. The answer is within you.
Yes.
And it's possible for you to get that answer. So if you are a mom or dad out there and you are earlier on in your journey than the three of us, you're in the littles stage, that answer is there for you.
And I would even offer that it really starts from your own self first, before the partner part of it, right? Like just within, you know, what does Susanna need? You know, it's really that simple. Like, what does Susanna need? What does Susanna need? What does Susanna want? Innermost heart's desire. Like, how often do we ask ourselves these questions? And by the way, as you both were sharing about the joy that we call my little sister, who's one of five, we call her the caboose of the family, right? So I'm looking at Sigourney, Siggy, and Kate as the caboose. Like, can you imagine without the caboose? Because my youngest sister, Shenandoah, was born. My brother was number four, and she was 9 years younger than him. So she was a treat, you know, she was a surprise. But I just want to acknowledge you both as you were both sharing. I was like, wow, you know, as other people are giving you flack for, oh, really? You want to have one more? You want to bring one more mouth to feed into your family? Mm-hmm. All I heard was, wow, such resilience in motherhood, you know, and choosing to bring another life into this world, whether it was expected or not, you know, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. You know, we figure out how to expand our hearts. We figure out how to expand the support so that it can now cover another child, right? Mm-hmm. To me, it is all miraculous. One more thing, just mention, you know, as I was deciding that I didn't want to have more children, I felt guilty about that too. And that I had so many friends who were going through IVF and trying to really figure out how to be pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that is another journey that can be so challenging and fraught with frustration and heartbreak and worry. And again, I had to sort of come back inward and reflect back inward, like, okay, and so let me just be grateful for what is for me and what is a knowing for me, which is I'm done having, you know, children. In fact, you know, made the decision to even ultimately get a hysterectomy for some fibroid issues, like, no problem. My uterus is goodbye. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Got a job. Yes.
Right. Thank you for this Arizona of mine. So yeah, I hope that in all things that we can lean on each other and be with each other and share with each other vulnerably. There is a sisterhood out there for you. We are here. We are it. And yeah, let's have the conversation if you're willing to do so.
Well, something I thought of that I don't want us to leave today's conversation without just mentioning is the sibling experience. And there is so much to say about the sibling experience. There's a lot for parents to really know and understand what the siblings need and want. And again, another little plug is that we do have a resource on our website, What the Siblings Want You to Know in a Disability Family. And there are 12 points in there. And that's, you know, it comes through my own research and interviewing siblings, talking to Luke and Kate, talking to adult siblings. And there it's chock full of information, not to scare you. There are effects on siblings when you have a child with a medical diagnosis, a genetic diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis. There are effects on the siblings when there is one child who is spicier, let's say, than the rest, or a child that requires more time, more attention, more finances, more support, that there is an effect on the siblings. Now, Luke and Kate are amazing. They are resilient. They are strong. They are patient. They are empaths. They are beautiful human beings. And they have some scars and they have some PTSD because PWS comes with behaviors and sometimes aggression, and it's hard. So it has been hard. That is something to weigh in when you're thinking about the sibling experience. And again, none of us have a magic, you know, ball to see the future. None of us as parents can know how things are going to play out. But whether you have a child who's mildly impacted, moderately, or severe, there are some beautiful and hard repercussions for siblings. So it is, you know, just something to throw in the mix, to mull around in your heart and in your mind as you make that decision. And we've done episodes in the past. So in our library of episodes, we have interviewed siblings. If you would like to hear those stories, we're happy that we have that offering for you.
That's an excellent point, Jessica. Whether, you know, you're thinking about the siblings that may already be here, or a potential sibling, if you're thinking of having another child after having a child with a disability. You know, all my children have been affected very differently with Sully. You know, I have this large age gap, so that makes a difference as well. But in the back of my mind, and in the back of my children's mind, is this understanding that we have to take care of Sully, right? That we, as a family unit, somehow, obviously I will do it as long as I am able and on this earth, but there's that idea. And it does, you know, it changes you. It changes you as a family. It changes your perspective. And that, of course, trickles down to your children. Now, I think there's some beautiful blessings. You know, Siggy has, you know, she's the baby of the family and has still become an older sister to Sully. And even that dynamic was hard because Sully had enough wherewithal to know that my baby sister is passing me in these areas. My baby sister can read and I can't read. My baby sister talks clearly. Everyone understands her and I can't. And that was a difficult dynamic between the two of them being girls and Sully being 7 years older and watching her baby sister just surpass her. And now she surpassed her in height as well. Yeah, it's just part of the tapestry of a family with disabilities. And there's beautiful, beautiful parts of it, gifts that your children will get. And there are really, really hard, hard lessons. And there's grief and pain in that too. So it's all of it.
It is. It's all part of the decision-making process. And if you're out there listening and you're thinking of other questions that you would like to ask us for an Ask Us Anything episode, there is a little cute old-fashioned voicemail linked in our show notes, and you can leave us a request. You can leave us a question. We would absolutely love to hear from you. And even if you just want to share a funny motherhood story, we would love to hear it. We would love to hear it. So just check out SpeakPipe in our show notes.
And for that, Bravies, we just want to say that we see you and we love you, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio.
Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together. We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in-person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. And we have published our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight. It will encourage and validate every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.